I know that you've been sitting a long time. Many of you are familiar with that slogan on the radio, LSMFT. Let's stand, my fanny's tired. My name is Ray Harrison. I'm 48 years old and a plain old drunk. I'm a lawyer. In 59 days, it'll be 8 years since I had my last gurgle. I ain't a very fancy speaker. I say ain't. I took a postgraduate course at Yale. I've been saying ain't ever since. The Harvard boys speak differently. But I'm glad I'm not one of them. Now, some of you here aren't alcoholics, and I imagine you're wondering, which ones are the alcoholics? Or I wonder if she drank. I bet she was a wild one. Sunday, I spoke at Atchison, Kansas, at a big AA party. And a good soul in the audience, they opened it up to questions, said she was from the WCTU, and she knew. Now, if there's any WCTU members here, I haven't got any quarrel with you. I love you. But I'm telling you what this lady said. I don't see any, do you? She said she knew that the drunks soon became crazy because of the absorption into the bloodstream of so much alcohol that it destroyed the brain tissue. So your speaker tonight, my friends, is a blubbering idiot. To those of you who are wondering which ones are the members of AA, I got a solution for that. The ones who have the peaceful, contented look on their faces, they're the members of Alcoholics Anonymous. The rest of you have got something wrong with you. I'm glad I know what it is with me. In addition to being an alcoholic, I'm a mental case, too. When I was drinking, I used to like women. I still like them. That kind of worried me. I asked Al Badger about it, and he said he made research for me. He looked all through the 12 steps, and there wasn't anything said about women or watermelon, so I could just go ahead and have my fill. We don't take any side course in the controversial wet and dry subject. I was surprised to learn that this county was dry. Doggone, I wish my friend from Atchison, Kansas, could be with me and see this crowd in a dry Texas county. Our feelings are best expressed by the story of the Irishman who was listening to the temperance lecture, who was waving his arms on a soapbox on the corner and saying, if you drink whiskey, you'll die, young man. You'll go to an early grave. And the Irishman back in the crowd looked up at him and he says, you will you? Well, I'll tell you something. Every morning before breakfast, my father drank a pint of whiskey. Every noon before lunch, he drank another pint of whiskey. Every night before dinner, he drank another pint of whiskey, and he lived to be 99 years old, and 4 days after he was dead, he looked better than you do right now. Hey, tell a story up there in Iowa about a salesman traveling on the road. Checked out of a little Iowa hotel, two-story affair, and left his umbrella in the room. He didn't know that as he checked out of that room, a young married couple on their honeymoon checked in to the same room. He got out on the road 5 miles and discovered the loss of his umbrella and said, well, tonight he'd go back, so he did. The clerk wasn't there, and he'd had a few gurgles, so he jumped 2 steps at a time upstairs. Just about to go into the door of the room, and he heard a man's voice on the inside say, whose cute little baby blue eyes are those? And he heard a girl's voice say, they're yours, honey, all yours. And he heard the man's voice say, whose cute little pug nose is that? And he heard the girl's voice inside say, it's yours, honey, all yours. And he heard the man's voice say, whose cute little rosy red lips are those? And the girl's voice said, they're yours, honey, all yours. And the drunk outside said, when you come to that umbrella, that's mine. They tell a story about a fellow who went to a new town, and he wanted to succeed very badly. So one of his friends said, well, you must join a club. Everybody here belongs to the club, so you better get in a club. So this night, the fellow was trotting along the street, and he saw what he thought was a club on the second floor. He walked up, and it happened to be the Knights of Columbus. And he went in and said, I'd like to join this club. I'm a new man in town. And the secretary said, are you a Catholic? No, the fellow said. Well, the secretary said, you've got to be a Catholic if you're going to join this club. Well, the guy didn't like that very well, so he went back down on the street. And he thought, well, I'll try another club. And this time I'll tell him I'm a Catholic ahead of time. So he saw another window. He happened to get into the Masonic Lodge there. And he walked upstairs and he said, I'd like to join this club. I'm a good Catholic. I go to Mass every morning. Why, the secretary says, you can't join this club if you're a Catholic. And the guy says, well, I'm a dirty son of a... Oh, he says, you want the AA club. That's down there in Turkey. I had to watch myself there. I was using that Truman language. Were those all Democrats that applauded? You heard about the Truman beer, didn't you? No head on it? Now you can tell that I'm not a Democrat. You heard the story about the Rotary Club that had a bylaw that said that no speaker could talk over 15 minutes. So they invited a fellow to tell about his trip to Europe. The fellow said, gosh, I can't tell about it in 15 minutes. Well, they said, then tell the highlights of your trip. Well, he said, I'll do the best I can, but that's going to cramp me a lot. Well, they said, go ahead. So he said, well, I suppose the highlight of my trip was that I was in Paris. And I was seated at a sidewalk cafe there. And he said, a beautiful doll came along. And gentlemen, he said, I've been to New York, Chicago, San Francisco, and Tyler. And she sat down with me, and she joined me in a couple of drinks. Finally, she said, would you like to go up to my boudoir? And I said, yes. I said, I went up to this lady's apartment, and he said, oh, what wonderful furnishings, beautifully done, colors galore. He said, I've been to New York, Chicago, San Francisco, Tyler. Never saw anything like it. Said, finally, she said, would you like to go into the bedroom, look it over? He said, yeah. She opened the door. He said it was beautifully draped and the rugs was that thick. He said, in New York, Chicago, San Francisco, and Tyler, I've never seen anything like it. Just then the chairman rapped and he said, time's up. Well, the Rotary stood up to a man. Every one of them said, let him go on. No, sir, the chairman said, the bylaw says 15 minutes. He spoke 15 minutes. That's all. Well, they said, let's have a meeting and amend the bylaw. So they had a special meeting and took a vote and unanimously voted to throw the bylaw in the wastebasket. And the chairman turned to the man and said, go ahead. Well, the man said, gentlemen, I'm kind of sorry you went to all that trouble. Because from here on out, everything was exactly the same as it is in New York, Chicago, San Francisco. Suppose you heard about the three alcoholic rabbits. The three alcoholic rabbits that drank quite a long while and got along pretty well until they met some cats in the same neighborhood. One of the rabbits' name was Foot. The other rabbit's name was Foot Foot. And the third rabbit's name was Foot Foot Foot. So they were drinking one day there down in the meadow, and Foot Foot says to Foot Foot Foot, he says, Foot Foot Foot, you know, I think Foot is drinking too much. And Foot 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 says, why don't you mind your own business? And Foot Foot says, well, comes it, I think we're all three drinking quite a bit. And Foot 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 says, well, let's talk about something else. Well, everything went along fine until Foot died. And they were having the funeral. And Foot Foot and Foot 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 were at the funeral. They were sitting there with their heads in their paws, having had a bad night the night before. And Foot 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 says, I remember, Foot Foot, it wasn't long ago when you and I were talking about our drinking problem. And and Foot 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 says, I think, Foot Foot, that we should do something about it now. And Foot Foot says, what, Foot Foot, Foot makes you think that? And Foot 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 says, well, with one foot in the grave, it's time we joined AA. I can't let the doctor go here, alcoholic doctor. Fellow was going to have a baby, and his wife, and she told him it was time. He went to the phone to call the doctor. The doctor was on vacation. So she said, well, just get any doctor then. So the guy got a eye, ear, nose, and throat man who happened to be an alcoholic to come. So the alcoholic doctor, eye, ear, nose, and throat man came, and he had the little black bag. He went into the room, came rushing out, and said to the father, go get some hot water. And the father ran and got the hot water. Doctor took it back in. The doctor come out and said, go get a hammer. And the fellow says, a hammer? Yes, the doctor says, get it quick. It's an emergency. The guy ran and got the hammer, gave it to him. The doctor ran back in. The doctor come out and said, get a chisel. The guy said, a chisel? Yes, the doctor said, get it. It's an emergency. So he ran and got a chisel, took it back in. The doctor did. Finally, the doctor came back out and said, I got to have a big pair of pliers. And the fellow said, doctor, pliers, what are you doing to my wife? And the alcoholic doctor said, your wife? Hell, I can't get that damn black bag open. I don't know how many of you are football fans. If you'd have been to the Notre Dame Southern California game of 10 years ago, there were 52,000 people there. At the halftime, a drunk down on the field got the microphone away from the guy who was announcing the plays to the crowd. And he asked everybody in the stand to stand up and sing Sweet Adeline. And just then, three great big burly policemen came and very roughly took that drunk off the field. I was one of that four. I've never been a policeman. I wasn't very anonymous about my drinking. 52,000 people there. When my sponsor called on me, I said, where will we meet? Didn't want anybody to see me. Me, who they drug out of the field in front of 52,000 people. Now, I don't want nobody to know. Well, I guess we're all the same. I'm going to tell you something about me, very briefly, with the hope that there's some new man here who might get the idea that he drank like I did. And that if that guy can stay sober, that I can too. I wasn't a very fancy drinker. I was a rum flip drinker. You know, rum flips are made with sugar, eggs, and rum. Sugar to give you strength, eggs to give you energy, and rum to give you ideas what to do with that strength and energy. I never drank at the very swank rendezvous. Maybe I'd start there. Sometimes they used to point to me and say that big white lawyer up there at the bar. He's been there too. My parents, neither one of them drank. I was born of good religious parents, had a good religious grade school education. My grandparents, neither one drank. My sister had the same environment as I. She didn't drink. I went to Drake University and took my law. Won a postgraduate to Yale. Went down and took that in the law. Voted the man most likely to succeed. And in 10 years, I was a bum. I mooched drinks on the corner of Hollywood and Vine. Jail all over the country. Always could get free drinks. Used to tell Mama that I got a lot of good law business out of my drinking. That I had to make contacts by getting drunk once in a while. Joined the country club. Because I told Mama that would certainly get me, make a big corporation lawyer out of me. Country club kind of hinted that they wished I'd leave. So I took the hint and resigned. The Elk. I'd been an Elk for 22 years. They bought some new Davenports at our club. Beautiful. I wanted to lay down on them when I was drunk. They were narrow-minded. They said, we haven't any sleeping quarters. I said, I'll make some. So they kind of hinted around that they wished I'd quit. So I resigned from the Elk. Getting along fine. My office, little law office, got to be the place where on Saturday night we'd go and start to get drunk before the dance. And then I heard about the 40-hour week. And I didn't see why a lawyer should have to work on Saturday. So I told Mama to hell with it. We're going to close the office up on Friday. I moved my weekend up to Friday night. We started drinking Friday night. Then out to the club all day Saturday. And I got down to where I was playing 3 holes of golf. And then I'd say, I got a pain in my back. I got to go back to the clubhouse. Lend me your opener. And get drunk. Carried over Sunday, quit going to church. With youth, shake your head and go to work, all right. But as the years rolled on and that pattern continued, I soon discovered I was taking a drink on Monday. And that was quite a shock. I knew something was wrong, and I didn't know what. And then, every morning, and then at 11 o'clock, taking a drink. And then one with lunch, 2 o'clock a drink, and always drunk every weekend. My close friends would say, why don't you quit drinking? I'd say, why don't you? Mama says to me, you better quit drinking. I'd say, why don't you quit smoking? Because I knew she couldn't do that. Why don't you quit playing bridge, I said. Cut out coffee. That'd be the end of that. All the time, my wife and my sister and my mother saying novena after novena that I'd quit. It just got worse. And then I was elected into the office of DA in my county. And brother, that's a great opportunity for an alcoholic. Because you're dealing with bootleggers. And you're handling the evidence, too. You know, you have to go home and study the case a little tonight. Put a little bit of Exhibit A in the briefcase. Take it home. Boy, I used to give that Exhibit A hell, I'll tell you that. Well, everything went fine, I thought. Everybody in town was talking about my drunkenness, but I thought nobody knew nothing about it. Until one day it happened. I was put in my own jail with men that I'd just prosecuted. Now, I don't recommend that as a good way to establish quick friends. Here I was giving them hell in the afternoon. That night, the same door opened up for me to go in there with them. Well, you'd think that'd be enough to shame me into quitting drinking. Oh, I had plenty of shame. Every time I'd be real sick, thinking I'm going to die, I wasn't so afraid of death as I was the shame of dying drunk. Not so much what it would mean to me, because I'd be dead, but the shame it'd bring on my kid, whom I love very much. He's now 10. The Yankee, we call it. He said to me, after I was in AA a while, you don't take that medicine anymore, do you, Daddy? And that was it for me. That's payoff enough for any little nights that I've lost sleep helping another guy. He'll be at the airport to meet me tomorrow. And he hugs me tighter since I've quit drinking. And so does Mama, my wife. That's payoff enough. Well, I didn't know what was to become of me. I prayed. And sometimes I think it was a sacrilege to pray in the condition I was in and the places I had been. My prayers were pretty phony, like the rest of me. I might well have said to God, God, help me get over this one, and if you do, I'll get over the next one by myself. I might well have added that. Well, AA introduced me again to God. And for that, I shall be eternally grateful. Into my little office one day walks a guy who I once prosecuted when I was in the DA's office. And I inadvertently, instead of putting him in jail, I asked the court to put him in the hospital because I told the court, this guy has been in jail 78 times in the last year. And I've about come to the conclusion that jail isn't helping him quit drinking. So let's try the hospital. And he never forgot it. So he was in AA a week in Omaha. And he got on the train at his own expense, of course, and came to see me. We didn't have any AA in Iowa then. And he called me, and it was a Saturday afternoon, and I went down to the office thinking it would be a big $10 case. You know. And here's this guy who I knew as the prize comedian, the booze comedian of my town, who walked in, and bear in mind he's only a week dry, and he looked good, and I envied his serenity. And he said, you don't remember me, but you prosecuted me once, and I'm an AA, and you could use some AA. Why, I said, Bud, you're here too late. I quit drinking. Didn't you hear about it? No, I said, I didn't hear about it. Why, I said, I haven't had a drink in 10 weeks. And I hadn't. My last one was 8 days long. And this was the carryover from that. I'd promised Mama I wouldn't drink again. He said, if you haven't had a drink in 10 weeks, you'll be drunk in 2 weeks because you always get drunk every 3 months. And you know, that was just the way I was planning it. I knew that he knew what he's talking about. He knew me. But I said, no, and I don't know organization that has the word alcohol in its name. Just take it easy now. Don't rush me into this. Me who's been drinking for 20 years. Well, he said, will you please read the book? And he gave me the big book, and to get rid of him, I said I would. And I took it home, and this was one of those Saturday nights that Mom and I had lots of. With my drinking, folks quit asking us to go anyplace. And we'd sit home and play cribbage. And Mama never kicked. She'd be tickled to death as long as I was sober. And this was one of those Saturday nights. We'd read in the paper the next day of all of our friends having a dinner party. But we weren't invited. And we knew why, on account of me. Oh. We went home and Mama got the cribbage table out and I said, I don't want to play tonight. I want to read. And I started in. And I couldn't lay it down. I finished the next morning about 6 o'clock. Sat up all night. And I got on the long-distance phone. I called my sponsor back. And I said, come on back to Des Moines, will you please? And I shudder to think now what would have happened had he not got that call. And had I had time to cool down. But he got it. And I can see now my ma's prayers begin paying off. And he got on the train and came back again. And he said, when do we have the first meeting? And I said, we got to get some more drunk. That's the first time I called me a drunk. I kind of thought I was a different kind of a drunk. Kind of a high tone drunk. See? Kind of a second Clarence Darrow, only better looking, you know. I thought drunks were bums. You would mooch drinks. Now complaining about bums. Well, he got on the phone and I got on the phone. And the next day we had 5 in my little law office. 2 of them drunk at the time. Ah, that was the greatest AA meeting of all AA meetings for me. One fellow got up and made a long talk. And the text of it was what a son of a bitch his mother-in-law was. We all applauded that. We all agreed. Because our mother-in-laws were right in that same category at that time. Truth in fact, my mother-in-law is a very lovely lady. Screwed up thinking. 5. But here's another payoff on the prayer, and if anybody's got any explanation for it other than my ma's prayers, let him stand up and tell me what it is. 4 of that 5 are still sober and still in AA. There's now 4,000 in my state, in 81 cities and towns. Miracle? What do you think? There's no other explanation, no natural law explanation for that. That's not the work of any man or group of men. That's the work of Almighty God, that's all. That's all it is.
Well?
The next meeting, out to my house, I prayed nobody'd come. I said, if you come, we'll have dinner. And I'll make spaghetti and meatballs. And what do you know, all 5 came and they brought 3 more. Now we're 8. So we had another meeting. All 8 came, nobody'd had a drink. They brought 5 more, now we're 13. Had another meeting. All 13 came. Nobody had had a drink. Brought 10 new ones. Now we're 23. We moved downtown to a basement of a restaurant to have our meeting. And then it happened. Uh-oh.
One guy got drunk. Some call him a slip. Some call him a nosedive. Some call him a relapse. Chenley calls it whiskey. We sat with him, all of us, for 4 nights and 4 days. I locked up my law office. This thing that we thought was a utopia wasn't infallible. Oh, our chins fell. We thought you could throw away the jails, do away with the insane hospitals. Every drunk in the world will certainly come to AA. And here was one of our boys, Hawkeye. And we all knew that in certain rotations, like geese, we'd each line up and follow that pattern. And we debated whether or not to tell our wives. We didn't want them to be hurt. And I told Mama about it, that this guy got drunk. And boy, he explained like she never explained before.
Why, she said you might expect that. You can't expect it to be 100% perfect. He said you've got to expect it, and you'll get something out of the fact that he did get drunk.
But that worried her. It worried Mama, too. They didn't know, and neither did we, which one of us would be next. But then you know what it was that kept us from going that way? It was the fact that we had promised another guy, a new man, that this was it. That you didn't have to slip. That you could stay sober. And if you get down on your knees, you'd get back on your feet. And had it not been for that promise that we'd made to the new men, I'm quite certain that in certain rotations, all of us would have followed the example of the man of distinction who switched to Calvert. We'd all lined up because that was the easiest thing to do. But we were now duty-bound by honor, and I think alcoholics have honor. Now I'm talking about plain old drunks, like we have in AA. Of course, our fraternity is like all the rest. We sometimes have three or four different kinds of AA. We have that fella who, after he's dry a little while, he gets kind of distinguished. And he says, I wish that they wouldn't bring in so many bums. I wish that they'd make every fellow wear a white shirt that comes to the meeting and shave. He gets awful dignified. He begins to whisper about one of the married men who's establishing a little too close a rapport with that new babe that came in the club. He feels sorry for the married man's wife. The same kind of a guy who says in the traditions, he says we don't need money. Let's do away with the money part. Let's don't have any collection. And why don't we have more turkey sandwiches? He goes home to the wife and he tells her that he wants the kids to genuflect when he comes in the door. But now Daddy isn't drinking anymore. And he's a great martyr. And the paragon of all virtues. He don't swear now. He thinks anybody is a bugger that plays poker. I don't play poker. But this guy thinks that anybody who plays any kind of card is certainly a devil. He soon decides that the little woman looks a lot older than he does. And she hasn't got his pep. So he gets another little woman. The guy who was complaining about the Red Riding Hood romance in AA. The paragon of all virtues. The guy who now measures all morals by his idea of what's right or wrong. And he generally
is a guy who's broken every law in the book and every moral law himself. But now that he's dry 3 months, he's an officer. The wings will be coming pretty short. Well, we don't have very many of those in AA. Most all of our men and women are like wine. They improve with age. They get calmer and mellower and more serene. And they change their prayer from a petition to an act of gratitude. Thanking you for what you have. I don't like to speak about my family, but I had the Yank on my radio show yesterday noon because it was the last day of school and I wanted a kid to angle on there. And without any rehearsal, I said to the Yank, "Son, what would you want if you could have anything in the world given to you right now? What would you want?" And he said, "Daddy, I'd want things to stay just exactly the way they are." And I like that because that's the way Mama feels and that's the way I feel. And I know that they can't. I know that with old age, a lot of people dread seeing it coming. But I think in AA we don't. We have a great happiness, a great, wonderful old age ahead of us. With the years becoming more serene, you know? The Lord has a funny way of doing things, as each one of our lives certainly proves. Did you ever notice that when in a family a loved one is taken away, but then, quite by coincidence or accident, there's some grandchildren who absorb the love of the surviving spouse? And the love that you give to the grandchildren, I think, in my humble opinion, perhaps is even in greater measure than you would have given to the deceased member of the family had he been alive. And we see it in AA with every slip. We then have a knock on the door, and it's a new guy wanting to come in. A guy who's even willing to say a prayer to stay sober. A guy who we can put our arm around and say, "Come, you can make it." Yeah, like Bernadette of Lourdes said, to those who know God, no explanation is necessary. And to those who don't know God, no explanation is possible. But I'm talking to people tonight who do know God. I don't think we need make any apology for the fact that we ask God for help every day. You know, a lot of great guys, a lot of strong guys, who when in time of trouble like we were, asked their God for help and got it. And I think of LeSueur's beautiful painting of Washington on his knees at Valley Forge. He was in trouble. He was praying to his God, as he understood him. And then I think of what Lincoln said in the Civil War, "With God's assistance, we cannot fail." I think what Roosevelt said in the Declaration of War on Japan, wherein he closed that statement, "We will gain the inevitable triumph, so help us God." I think of what MacArthur said when they landed again on the Philippines, when he gave a public statement to the press, wherein he said, "People of the Philippines, we are here. By the grace of Almighty God, we've again landed on your soil. Let the indomitable spirit of Bataan and Corregidor lead on as the lines of battle move forward and carry your homes within the zones of operations. Rise and strike for your homes and hearts. Strike in the name of your sacred dead. Strike. Let no heart be faint. Let every arm be sealed. The guidance of divine God leads the way. Follow in his name to the holy grail of righteous victory." Who am I to challenge that? Who am I to say there's no God? I've never seen a fellow who didn't believe in God. Oh, I've seen smart alecks who get up and say, "I'm an agnostic." But they might well have said, "I'm an agnostic, thank God." I've never seen a guy. I wish sometime I would. So I could say to him, "My friend, I'd like to take you to the meadow in the spring where you could see the poppies growing. And I'd like to take you to the rim of the Grand Canyon at sunset where you'd see the harmony of color. And I'd like to take you to Catalina Island, where you'd see the moonlight and see the harmony of the beautiful rays of the moon. And I'd like to take you to an AA meeting, my friend, where you'd see God. Everybody believes in God. Certainly, in our fumbling, feeble fashion, we argue, sometimes I think by near to hypnosis, to a new man, the fact that prayers pay off, my friend. And if we can ever change his way of thinking to the way of thinking where he's willing to say even a prayer, then he don't drink again. And bear in mind that in AA, we capitalize on the failures that we've had. Many have done that before us. Edison, they say, had 20,000 failures before he succeeded in the incandescent lamp, and then had a wonderful victory. Remember, the earth doesn't produce fruit until the earth has had a harrowing experience. We of AA have had that experience and have twisted it by magic with the help of Almighty God into the greatest happiness that God can give to man. Sobriety, serenity, happiness and joy and peace of mind. We learned the hard way that by giving we get, that by giving of ourselves and what I call alley charity, where you give some guy something and expect not to get it back or expect even to be found out that you gave it to him. You know, a lot of us do a lot of lip service charity. I wonder how many of us could stand up if we should ask you to. How many of you last week bought a room for a guy who didn't have a room? Or how many of you took a guy home who was having trouble? Oh, I know, you might well say we don't want any drunks around the house. Who are we to say that who's been around the house for the past 20 years or so? In AA, we learn that by doing, by taking activating motion, by practicing what we preach, by being our brother's keeper, whether we like it or not, that then we're compensated for that by a great happiness and reward. We're not like the girl described in the book as Edith, who was surrounded on the north, south, east, and west by Edith. We can't stay sober that way in AA. We got to get away from self and get into the atmosphere of helping other people. I well remember one experiment that I made during my drinking times that I wanted to make purely in the interest of science. Mom had never let me have any liquor around the house, and when I did have it, she'd go home, and I didn't like that, because then there was nobody there to fire the furnace and take care of the house. So one time I told her that my system had to have so much alcohol a day. And one of the speakers this afternoon said that he had a physical craving for alcohol. We put that on the turnips up in Iowa, I might say. No such thing, I don't think. But I told Mama there was that my system had to have so much a day, and if she'd consent to let me drink just a little bit at home every day, that would be sufficient. So she said, all right. She knew enough about drinking that experiment shouldn't be with whiskey or gin that I liked. But she knew that cream de menthe was something that was drank in a little bitty glass. So she said, all right, we'll do that. We'll try it. With cream de menthe. And boy, I thought, here, I've scored a victory. I'm going to have a jug at home. Man of the distinction. Well, Mama went down and got a dozen little cream de menthe glasses. Brought them home. I couldn't wait till I got home from dinner. I said, is dinner ready? She said, no. I said, we'll have one. She said, all right. We got out those damn little cymbals. We poured one down the hatch. I said, dinner ready yet? She said, no. I said, we'll have another. We'll drink like the Continentals do. So she said, all right. We had another. Dinner was ready by that time, and I didn't want to eat any. I wanted to get it over with because I knew that you had to drink after dinner to aid digestion.
After dinner, I said to Mother, I'll pour this next one. I wanted to get out in the kitchen and get at that jug, see? I went out in the kitchen, poured those two, and took a good slug myself and came back in. I said, isn't this fine? I was drinking at home like
people should.
By midnight, the quart of cream de menthe was gone. Now, if you've never been sick from drinking... I burped in Technicolor. Well, my friends, I hope I haven't said anything that has offended anybody here tonight. I'm so damned happy that I'm alive. Not only sober, but just alive. But I'm very grateful to my God. I'm not a very holy guy. Don't pretend to be. I go to church a little better than I used to. I'm like the guy who used to steal automobiles and now steals kitty cars. I'm a little better than that. I go with a Yank once in a while, because I want him to go. I think great, wonderful things can come from homely, fumbling old prayers. I don't think they need to be done in fancy language. I think any petition to Almighty God for anything, whether it's your drinking problem or any other problem, will do the trick. I think you got to keep trying. You know, some great writer once said, the only difference between a great saint and a great sinner was that the great saint kept trying. And I'm so grateful that I can keep trying. And I'm grateful to you for inviting me here today. Every weekend for the past week, 8 weekends, I've been gone. Next weekend, I'll be home with my family, and it's kind of going to be a great holiday. I then go for another 6 weekends. I'm very grateful that I have the opportunity. I think it's the price that some of us lawyers have to pay to stay sober. I know I got to work awfully hard at AA to stay sober. And I'm very grateful that so many of you have been so kind to invite me. I hope that none of us ever get so smug as to think that we're great guys because we quit drinking. Because in truth and fact, nothing that we have done has contributed toward our sobriety. We have the same body and the same mind that we had when we were drinking. So we can't really take any credit. But if we ever do get to that type of thinking, we need then only look to the life of another alcoholic, Stephen C. Foster, and then cherish the possession that Almighty God has given to us. You know, Foster died at the age of 37 in Bellevue Hospital of mortal wounds that he had received in a Bowery basement in the slums of New York. And on his body were no material possessions except a little child's pocketbook. And inside of that pocketbook, on a torn scrap of paper, were written perhaps the words of a new song, "The Gold of Friendship." And that's what we've got. The gold of friendship in AA. And I like to think of Foster as being the typical alcoholic because I can see in the words of his song, "My Old Kentucky Home," the great love he had for beauty, the great love he had for his home, and yes, the tears of his wife. You know the words go, "The sun shines bright in my old Kentucky home. 'Tis summer, the darkies are gay. The corn stalks ripe, and the meadows are in bloom, and the birds make music all the day. Weep no more, my lady. Oh, weep no more today.
we shall sing one song of my old Kentucky home, of my old Kentucky home far away. Foster didn't have the same chance that you and I have had. What a great A.A. Foster would have been. His heritage to mankind were the melodies that he stored like jewels in the hearts of millions of God's children, jewels of which they couldn't be robbed, and jewels that they traveled with them all over the world. In the palace of American genius, there have been many knights and nobles, but the Prince of the Purple Chamber lay dead when Stephen C. Foster gently lay his weary head in the gentle arms of his maker and joined the old folks at home who had gone before. And speaking of song, Hal Badger's been after me to sing a song. And doggone your buttons, I'm going to do it. We got a little AA song up in Des Moines. It's not an official AA song. We don't sell it. If you drop us a note, we'll send you a copy for free. Compliments of our club. And here it is. Each day by day for me, AA, I found the life sublime. A prayer I say, 12 steps each day, all help keep me in rhyme. Each drunk I see that could be me, so help him, that's my cry. I try, help him erase his past disgrace, but for God's grace there